We open up our 18th season together with the host of the NFL Matchup Show and the author of Now in Paperback, Philly Special, the story of how the Philadelphia Eagles won the Super Bowl. Sal Palantonio. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning, Pat and Joe. Welcome to the National Football League 100th anniversary. Really excited this year. This team is loaded up and ready to go, I'll tell you.
I think they are. So let's start there, Sal. I got a million things to ask you. We want to start with that one. And the way I frame this game is it's a team with high, high expectations against the usual D.C. dysfunction. Is that an accurate way to describe this matchup tomorrow?
Well, I think there are several things on the matchup that you have to look at. I think on Thursday we got a little bit of a window as to what's going to happen Sunday around the National Football League. Clearly, by not playing starters, these coaches are definitely gambling with the health of their quarterbacks. You had 10 combined sacks. The defense was much faster and much more aggressive on both Chicago and Green Bay. Quarterbacks were under constant duress. You rarely see Rodgers go down that much. Trubisky, understandable, because you know he's a much younger quarterback. And I'm anxious to see how the Eagles' offensive line, two-thirds of which, actually four-fifths of which, really didn't play much at all during the preseason, handles a defensive front of Washington's that's not bad, especially when you consider Ryan Kerrigan's one of the best pass rushers from the outside linebacker position. Three defenses have always given Jim Schwartz, Doug Peterson problems. And I think this game will be slow going at the beginning. I think you'll see the offensive line struggle with the Redskins' defensive line in the first quarter going into the second quarter. And I hope that Doug Peterson recognizes that early on and uses a lot of double tight end sets to help, especially on the right side of the line where Lane Johnson is lined up against Ryan Kerrigan.
Sal, not just with Carson Wentz, who obviously grabbed all the headlines for not playing in the preseason like a lot of these other quarterbacks that you're talking about, but also a lot of players on the defensive side of the ball did not see any or much preseason action at all. Do you anticipate that there could be a similar kind of slow start defensively for the Eagles, considering how many important pieces didn't get the full load of work in the preseason?
No, I don't, Joe, because defenses are much more reactive and offenses are much more based on timing. And you saw it in the Bay Chicago game. The defenses were just so way ahead of both offenses. Now, listen, Carson Wentz was a special case. I completely agree with Doug Peterson not playing Carson Wentz. It's not comparable to Mitch Trubisky. Mitch Trubisky is a young quarterback in an anemic offense, and Matt Nagy needed to play Mitchell Trubisky in the preseason. Doug Peterson did not. Doug Peterson has won a Super Bowl, and I trust his judgment. And Carson Wentz needed to come out of the entire training camp preseason experience completely healthy with no nicks and scratches, and that has happened. So with a guy twice injured, it's a different situation. There are other players, however, that I think he could have played. Now, you know, Lane Johnson was somewhat hobbled during training camp. So this to me is the number one thing to watch in this game, especially in the early going. Right side of the Eagles offensive line against the Redskins defensive front, and how much game planning they've done in advance to help the right side of the line protect Wentz. Because what we have seen in training camp is two specific things regarding Wentz. He is expected to stay in the pocket more, and he's expected to get the ball out of his hands much more quickly than he has in the past. That should help Lane Johnson. But if things are not available to them and the Redskins have retooled their secondary, I expect the Redskins defense to play pretty well, especially early going in the game.
Sal, you were talking, I had the pleasure of your company Thursday night, you were talking about snap to release. And that's an interesting stat you had about Carson Wentz and where he ranked in overall compared to other NFL quarterbacks.
Well, you know, Carson has labored in that sense, compared specifically to the top guys in the league who constantly have gone to the playoffs and been successful in the playoffs, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and one Nick Foles. So I think all across the league, it's a copycat league, Pat. I think all across the league, and especially the Eagles, have learned their lesson, right? The way you neutralize the outside pass rush is by getting rid of the football. And we have a really interesting piece. Greg Cosette and Matt Bowen put together a really good piece on the NFL Matchup Show, which will be on tomorrow morning on ESPN. But you can DVR it. It debuted this morning on ESPN, too. But DVR is a really good piece on you have to have inside pass rush now. You have to have defensive tackles who can get after the quarterback because you've neutralized the outside pass rush with the short drops of the quarterback and the release. And, you know, the Redskins have a pretty good pass rush, especially in the A and B gaps. So it'll be up to I'm really anxious to see the new look of Carson Wentz. It was interesting what Doug Peterson said the other day when he said basically he told Carson Wentz, let the offense work for you. Distribute the football to your playmakers quickly. Who was he talking about there? He's talking about Nicky Foles.
Yeah, he's talking about Foles. Sure he is. Yeah, he's talking about Foles.
Yeah, he was thinking that was the hallmark of Nick Foles when he was here. You know, he let the offense work for him. He let the playmakers work for him. So that to me is, this will be a watershed moment the first 4 weeks for Carson Wentz. And tomorrow's a really, really good chance to see how it has worked. And the big gamble of not playing Carson Wentz in the preseason, because what we saw Thursday night clearly was that Chicago's defense and Green Bay's defense. And let's face it, Green Bay's defense is not going to be great like it was on Thursday night. Mike Pettine's a good defensive coordinator, but not a great one. But that both offenses were just so bad, so slow to the ball, and I anticipate that's going to be the case. Pretty much around the league. Bottom line, my advice to everybody, take the under whenever you can.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, Sal, especially these first couple of weeks. One of the biggest stories that's kind of been ever evolving, and it seems like every hour we get an update to this Antonio Brown saga. As far as you're concerned in covering it, what in the world is going on out there in Oakland, and is there a resolution that could potentially be coming here?
Yeah, I was out there for Chapter 1, Joe. I was out in Napa for the Rams-Raiders joint practices when Antonio Brown was AWOL, missed 10 of the first 11 training camps practices, and then he did not show up for the Rams-Raiders' first preseason game, didn't even come to the stadium. And at that point, Mike Mayock and John Gruden were already at their boiling point with his burned feet and then the helmet controversy. And now the whole controversy over whether he should have been fined and whether the Raiders poured gasoline on the fire. I don't see how the Raiders didn't know this was coming. Mm-hmm. You know, they had to know. They were taking on this absolutely volatile situation and introducing it. And, you know, to me, It's a total risk-reward kind of thing. Is it worth it to your team? Is he that good? Well, I mean, the answer probably is no, right? I mean, you know, I think that the thing that drove Pittsburgh's success, although Brown was really obviously productive, was Roethlisberger, that offensive line, and Le'Veon Bell. I mean, that to me was the heartbeat of that football team.
Yeah, and it's boy, what a mess. Everybody thought that the Steelers got jobbed on that trade. Boy, they're not thinking that now. But
no, they're not. Yeah.
But here's a corollary to this, Sal. We've been talking about this throughout the high-quality program here. I want to go over to Zeke Elliott, and that is paying these guys this kind of money. So I have a two-part question for you. One is, did the Cowboys have a choice not to pay Zeke that money? In other words, the running back position. How important is that running back position? And if we all would attest that quarterback's the most important position in football, what is the second most important position on an NFL team?
There's a lot of questions. Let's start with the Cowboys first. I thought Jerry Jones made a big mistake. First of all, Zeke Elliott was under contract for multiple years, and he basically just forced Jerry Jones' hand. He forced him to do something from a PR standpoint, and I thought Jones capitulated. I really did. To me, no. If you look at it, no rushing title winner has ever delivered a Super Bowl title to his franchise. And the team is going to win or lose a Super Bowl based on two things, their ability to get after the quarterback and the ability for Dak Prescott to make plays down the field. And if you look at Dak Prescott's yards per attempt, it went down and down and down and down all year long, whether Elliott was on the field or not. Obviously, you've got to have a good running back in the offense that the Cowboys have. But I think they overpaid for Zeke Elliott. I think now they're in a tight spot with Dak Prescott contract wise. I think the Cowboys are going to have massive problems this year. Massive.
That's very interesting, Sal. And we'll see if that works. But look at the Rams. I guess the Rams are the
Rams are a good. They're a good example.
Your team. They certainly are. Right. They're now stuck with that contract. And
they're stuck with the contract, and they're stuck with a running back. And they are worse, Pat, because all they do is run play action pass and outside zone run and sprint right option off of play action.
Right.
Look at the first. I would invite anybody listening to this program to watch a matchup show tomorrow, because we show the first play in Super Bowl 53 when the Rams have the football. And what you see is how easy it was for Bill Belichick and the Patriots defense to completely dissect and derail the Rams offense. The Rams offense is so simple. It was so predicated on play action to Gurley. And it was really like stealing candy from a baby. It was unbelievable. Belichick just took McVay to school and laid down the blueprint on how to beat the Rams. And I think the Rams are in a worse situation than the Cowboys. I really do.
Oh, boy. Now, Sal, sorry to stick with the soap opera stories here, but the other big one, obviously, right before the season started was Andrew Luck's retirement. And then the Colts go from a team that has Super Bowl aspirations to a team wondering if they're going to be 500 or any better than that with Jacoby Brissett. As far as you're concerned watching that, what were your thoughts and takeaways from that whole saga and also the way that it was handled in Indianapolis?
Nick Foles is going to win the division in Jacksonville. That was my reaction.
Mm.
First of all, the Houston Texans lost their running back. They traded away Jadeveon Clowney. They brought on a headache and tonsil. Deshaun Watson was sacked 62 times last year, even with Lamar Miller in the lineup. So I would take Houston out of the equation. I would take the Colts out of the equation because Luck carried that team last year. And as far as the Titans go, I think you'll see that the Titans are a mess at the quarterback position. I think the Jacksonville Jaguars are going to win that division. Sports Illustrated had a 4-12 this year, Jacksonville. I couldn't believe that. I look at Jacksonville's schedule, and I see, at least 10 wins.
That'd be very interesting, Sal, to see. I hope Nick does well down there. I really do.
We all are rooting for Nick.
Yeah. All right, listen, I want to hit you guys. We're talking with Sal Palantonio, of course, joins me for my 18th year. It's great to have you back, Sal, presented by the good folks at First Bank in New Jersey. All right, listen, now USA Today had an interesting piece. I wanted to run some names by both of you guys. I'll start with you,
Pat,
Sal.
Pat, we're together for 18 years, Pat, on this show.
Yeah, that's right, Sal.
That is great.
I remember you had that jet black hair, boy, and it's really... It's a shame what's happened to the two of us. You've aged better. You have aged better, I'll say that. But
it's all hair dye and makeup for me, Pat.
All right, listen, I'm going to hit you six names. It's funny, we're already talking about coaches on the hot seat, but I do think it's interesting. I'm just going to give you the names of six coaches, and it's funny that half of them are from the NFC East, as to whether or not they're in must-win situations this year. I'll start Jay Gruden in Washington.
I don't agree, because... When you draft Dwayne Haskins in the first round, he's going to go to Dwayne Haskins at some point.
Right.
And I don't see how you can change coaches When you have a rookie quarterback starting in for a first year and then going into a second year. So I disagree with that. The question is whether Jay wants to stay or join his brother out in Oakland.
I see it as a pseudo Hugh Jackson situation in Cleveland, where the earlier you go to the young guy, the better, and the longer you stick with, say, Case Keenum in this case, the worse it is for your chances of surviving the year. So I agree with Sal, but the earlier that you get the younger guy involved, the better.
You give yourself time. The wild card's Dan Snyder, but is Snyder going to put up with a 3-13 season without doing something to look like he's doing something? You mentioned the Jaguars, Sal. Doug Marrone is in his fourth season there, and you know he makes Jeff Fisher look like Andy Reid when it comes to innovation. So I mean, if the Jaguars stumble, will he survive it?
No, I think John DeFilippo will become the head coach.
I don't think he survives it either.
All right.
They don't get back.
The marquee here. Let's do two at this time here. The two other NFC East: Jason Garrett in Dallas, which is unbelievable. You talk about nine lives, and then Pat Shurmur with the Giants. It just seems like he and Dave Gettleman not on the same page. How do you see these two guys coming into the season?
I think Shurmur's definitely back next year with Daniel Jones as the starting quarterback. Jason Garrett, you know, everybody keeps talking about Jason Garrett's demise every single year. But I think Jerry Jones likes Jason Garrett there. Jason Garrett doesn't rock the boat.
Yeah, I think they're both safe, too. I mean, similar reasons as Sal said. Also, because for some reason, I don't know what it is, I think the Dallas is going to be okay this year. They're not going to be a 7-9, 8-8 team this year.
It'll be very interesting to see. Sal said it earlier. I did not see that either, but Sal might be right. I think it's a big season for the Cowboys down there. A lot of expectations.
Yeah. These days I've been sort of paying attention to William Hill and some of the analysis that's coming out of their gambling operation. And some of the analytics that they have are pretty interesting. You know, particularly two teams in the NFC, the Cowboys and the Rams, both of those teams had the ball bounce in their way quite often, were quite lucky. Matter of fact, in the case of the Rams, and I didn't even know this until I read about it a couple of days ago, the Rams recovered 73% of their fumbles last year, of all fumbles in all games.
Wow.
Which was 20% higher than the league average. So the ball bounced a lot in favor of the Rams, and they won a lot of close games as a result. And it's hard to do that. You just regress towards the mean from one year to the next in terms of winning close games and recovering fumbles and turnovers. Cowboys, similar situation. And it's interesting, they were both picked by William Hill to be 7-9, both teams.
Wow.
Boy, oh boy. That's sobering. But let's get Sal. We're going to get to the top five here, brought to us by Gleason's Bar in Levittown, Bucks County, located at 6700 Mill Creek Road, right up the street from Truman High. Gleason's is under new ownership, and our buddy Pat McConaughey has big plans on the horizon. So stop by Monday through Friday for happy hour specials or pregame Sunday with a bacon Bloody Mary. Joe drinking a couple of them right now. And check out all the new TVs at Gleason's Bar, Levittown, Bucks County. We're live at the Barks Casino Sportsbook. Joey T has picked five teams here right off the book. In terms of over-under on wins, right, Joey?
Yes, this is coming to us from Parks Casino, so we'll start with Sal, and then we'll go to Pat. We'll start off, feel like we talked about these guys a lot, but the Dallas Cowboys, 9 wins, Sal.
I'm going to go under that.
Yeah, I'll go over that. Well, equal to or over. I think they get at least 9.
Okay. The next team, of course, your Philadelphia Eagles, Sal Palantonio, at 9.5 wins.
Oh, I'm taking the over on that.
Yeah, way over that.
I was surprised that that was the number.
That I'm going to have to wander over to the... I'm going to have to hit a kiosk if that's the number.
Indianapolis.
Double up on that for me, Pat, while you're there, okay?
All right.
The Colts at 6.5 wins this season, Sal, over under.
That's about right.
Yeah, 6.5. I'll take the over on that. I think they get the 7-9.
Then, of course, your beloved Los Angeles Rams, Sal. Yeah,
I know where Sal's going.
10.5 wins there on the book.
I don't see them winning that many games.
No.
I may have them 7-9, but I think they're destined to be an 8-8
team. 8-8, you're killing me, Sal. I mean, you're killing me. The team went to the Super Bowl. They didn't do it just because they recovered a bunch of fumbles. I mean, I'll say they're going to go under, but I think they go 10-6. Joey, what do you think?
I think the blueprint has been set down on how to beat that offense. And from what I saw of Todd Gurley in the joint practices with the Raiders, I saw no burst. I didn't see him run the length of the field with any kind of with his hips opened up. I just didn't see it.
Oh, my God.
I have them not reaching the 10 wins.
Thanks. Sure. What a shock that is.
Yeah, it's stunning.
You got anybody else?
Yeah, we got one more. We got the Kansas City Chiefs, Sal, at 10 wins.
Oh, I'm going the over on the Kansas City Chiefs. I got the Kansas City Chiefs as the AFC champions.
All right. Sal has them going into Foxborough in January, and he has Andy beating Bill. I don't, but can't. I would take the over on that too. I think the Chiefs are clearly the second best team in the AFC.
I think this is going to be a watershed year in the NFL. I think this is the year where we see the end of the Belichick Brady dynasty. I think this is the year where we begin to pick up multiple Super Bowl games where Carson Wentz goes against Patrick Mahomes. I think those would be the two quarterbacks. In the NFC and AFC, respectively, that'll be, battling it out for supremacy, battling it out for the MVP of the league year in and year out. I've got the Chiefs as the AFC champions, and I got the Eagles as the NFC champions. You know, in my job, Pat and Joe, as you know, you can't root for a team, and I don't root for a team, but you can root for the best story. And to me, the best story is Chiefs-Eagles, Super Bowl 54, 100th anniversary of the NFL, pupil against teacher, Doug Peterson against his old boss, Andy Reid, and Peterson beats Reid for Ali Frazier 1. I think they're going to meet in multiple Super Bowls.
All right, we'll see if Andy can matriculate the ball down the field for Kansas City like Hank Stram did 70 years ago. It'll be interesting, but... Sal, we appreciate you taking all this time. It's great.
Was that
back.
70 years ago? Oh my gosh, that far. I think it was only 50.
I know. It just seems like that. I'm looking more like Hank Stram every week. But Sal, it's great to have you back, and we look forward to talking to you each week throughout the season here on This Week in Pro Football.
All right. Have a great season, guys. It's great to join you on This Week in Pro Football. Thank you to all the listeners out there. This great show, and you guys have a great day. And happy football season, everybody.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.